This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I don't want anyone to feel worried or stressed about having it done at all. And I would always happily speak to anybody on the phone. Just anything I can do to make life a little bit easier for you coming to have it done, then absolutely, I would do what I can for you. And the same with the vaccination, how important the vaccination schedule is. There's a lot of fear about vaccines sometimes, but we can really show that it's got good results now coming out. And this is really going to help our young children and cancer rates in the future. So it's got to be a good thing.
Welcome to Dr. Nikki Explains. I'm Dr. Nikki, a GP of 24 years experience, and this is my friend Sarah.
I'm a mum of four with no medical background.
We've decided to do a podcast to explain medical conditions, hopefully in an accessible way. We often have a guest speaker who has experience or expertise.
The podcast is not a substitute for seeing your GP. If you have medical symptoms that are troubling you, please see a doctor.
We've based the podcasts on NICE guidelines, which is the National Institute for Clinical Excellence.
The podcasts do contain graphic descriptions of medical conditions and may not be suitable for a younger audience or those of a sensitive nature.
Thank you for listening. We are here today to discuss cervical screening and really to have a look at what the results mean and what HPV is, which you may or may not have heard of, and how we vaccinate against HPV and who's eligible for it, and a few other things at the end. So I'm Dr. Nikki.
And I'm Sarah.
And I'm Thelma. I'm one of the nurses.
And so we've got an expert with us today who does a lot of our cervical screening in the practice and also does a lot of our vaccinations. So very lucky to have Thelma today. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Thelma. Let's start off with finding out what is a cervix. Nikki?
Yes, it's a bit of a mystery, isn't it? I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's the thing that your parents tell you about when you're little. But basically, it's a little bit like a donut of muscle, of kind of hard tissue. And it's it sits at the top of the vagina and at the bottom of the womb. And it's basically the opening to the womb. It's the bit that the baby's head comes out of before it enters the vagina. So when we're doing a smear, we do have to put, we'll talk about how we do it in a minute, but we do have to put the speculum into the vagina. And the cervix is right at the tip of the speculum. And we'll tell you what a speculum is as well. But basically, that's what it is.
And Thelma, you do a lot of screening. You've been doing that for quite some time, haven't you?
Yes, I see a lot of the ladies to do their cervical screening. And it's a very straightforward, easy test to do. We generally screen to try and pick up cells. Well, first of all, we test for the HPV virus, which we'll explain a bit more a bit later on. But we're looking for cells. HPV can affect the cervical cells and potentially over time, they can turn into abnormal cells that could possibly turn into cancerous cells if left there for a long, long time.
So it's important to know that cervical screening, which is what we're discussing today, is there to pick up pre-cancer. So it's not there. I mean, very occasionally we do pick up cancers, but what we're actually looking for is pre-cancer. So that's why we do the screening. And HPV stands for human papillomavirus. It's a type of wart virus. It's a common group of viruses, and many people will get some form of HPV during their lives. It's very common. It's nothing to feel ashamed or embarrassed about. We quite often see, when we talk about results, we quite often see coelocytes on the smear result, and that means the wart virus-infected cells. You can get HPV from any kind of skin-to-skin contact of the genital area. So it's not just from penetrative sex. So it could be from vaginal, oral or anal sex or any skin-to-skin contact of the genital area or by sharing any sex toys. So there are some types of high-risk HPV that are more likely to cause cervical cancer. And these are the ones we are trying to detect when we do the smears. If they stay in your body, they can change the cells in your cervix. And as Thelma has just said, that can then change into cancer if it's not treated. If you don't have high-risk HPV, it's very unlikely that you'll get cervical cancer, even if you've had abnormal cell changes in your cervix before. And that's because 95% of cervical cancer cases are caused by the HPV virus.
So we're looking to see whether the HPV virus is present.
Yes. And primarily, I think there's two strains, isn't there? 16 and 18 seem to be the higher risk ones that give you these abnormal cells potentially on your cervix.
So Who is at risk of cervical cancer?
I think probably anyone that's been sexually active is at risk. We tend to do start screening at the age of 24 and a half for the girls, and that will go up to the age of 65. So anyone that's is sexually active within that age group puts themselves at a slightly higher risk. I think younger people tend to be more at risk because potentially got sort of more sexual partners, but that's very different in this day and age. I think they're all, you know, relationships change and break down and there's lots of new relationships. So you are always potentially at risk from the HPV virus. So it's important you have the screening that we can pick up that virus.
I think there's a few things to say as well in that you are still at risk of cervical cancer. Even if you've had the HPV vaccine, your risk is much lower, but there are lots of different types of HPV. So there's still a small risk of cervical cancer, even if you have had the vaccine. You can get cervical cancer, even if you've only had one sexual partner. You can get HPV the first time you're sexually active, which would be unlucky, but it's not impossible. If you've had the same partner or not had sex for a long time, you can have HPV for a long time without knowing it. You can get cervical cancer if you're a lesbian or a bisexual. You're at risk if you've had any sexual contact. You can have cervical cancer if you're a trans man with a cervix, or if you've had a partial hysterectomy that did not remove all of your cervix. So even if you've had some of your women removed, if they've left the cervix behind, then you can still get cervical cancer. But if you've never had any kind of sexual contact with a man or a woman, you may decide not to go for cervical screening when you're invited, but you can still have a test if you want to have one, because it's a choice.
So who is invited and how do people get invited, Velma?
So National Health Service will invite you in between the ages of 24 and 50. If your screening is all normal, you're be invited every 3 years, unless you had any irregular bleeding or problems or abnormal discharge, any problems in between. We'd want you to come in sooner than that. When you get to the age of 50, your risks are considered slightly lower. So between the ages of 50 and 64, it's every 5 years, again, unless you had any problems, irregular bleeding, etc.
And how do you get in touch?
They will get sent a letter from the health authority.
Okay.
And that comes automatically. And there will keep inviting you until you do actually appear, unless you decide that you don't want it done. You'd have to just sign a disclaimer to say that you don't want it done. But obviously we want to encourage people to keep coming, so you will keep getting letters.
Why do you think people are hesitant, or why might they not want to come?
Well, obviously it's a very embarrassing procedure to have done. There's a lot of scare stories about how uncomfortable, how painful it can be. A lot of it's very untrue. Yes, it's very embarrassing, but all ladies, we have to have it done. And it really doesn't take very long to do at all. So it probably takes longer to do the paperwork than to actually do the procedure itself.
I think we're also very aware of this being an issue for women. And obviously we are women ourselves, so we've had to have them done. But I think that, you know, what we will try and do is make sure that the lady is as comfortable as possible and explain the procedure first. It might be a good time to explain what we actually do, Velma.
Yes. Well, once you've got your invitation and you're eligible and it's your time to have your smear done, you'll be made an appointment. Quite often you can book your appointment online now, so you don't have to necessarily speak to a receptionist. You can just book in and come and see one of our nurses. As I say, it doesn't take very long to do. We'll obviously get you in. We'll go through all sort of history. We'd really like to check blood pressure and things and just check out period pattern, make sure that's all nice and regular, and maybe contraception while you're there. We'll talk to you about it. To do the procedure itself, we have to lie you onto the couch. Unfortunately, it's bottom half bits off, but we do give you a little dignity blanket to try and give you as much privacy as possible. Generally, it is just one nurse in the room with you, unless you wanted a chaperone, and you can have an independent chaperone. You could have a family member if you wanted, or you could have another medical member of the team if you wanted someone else in with you. But quite often, the ladies just want to be us two together. So we'd get you sort of lying on your back, knees up. We have to pop a plastic device in called a speculum. Now, in the old days, they were big metal clanky things. They've got a lot better now. They're plastic disposable. And this little device just opens up your vagina a little bit, so we can see your cervix clearly at the top of your vagina. And once we can see your cervix, as Nikki said, it looks a bit like a donut, or I think of it as a cotton reel myself. Then with a little brush, we will go around your cervix just a few times, 5 times we have to do it. And that just scrapes off some of the cells, and then we pop it into the pot. So literally, it really does take a couple of minutes. And there's a little bit of paperwork we have to do, just filling out the forms for the lab. And once we've done the sample, we will send it off to the lab. It takes a couple of weeks for them to process. If they need to look at cells, they'll test it first of all for the HPV virus. If that's negative, then it's quite a quick turnaround. You should get your result within 2 weeks. If they find the HPV virus, then they will look at the cells that we've harvested, and they'll look to see if there's any changes that have been affected with the HPV virus. If there is, they will get you to go to the hospital where they have a bit of a closer look with a more specialised camera. I'll say to people, it doesn't always mean there's anything wrong, but they need to have a little look. And if there was anything they were concerned about, they can take those cells away.
I think it's important with the smear process to say that you can stop at any time. If you don't like it, we are very happy to stop. But it, as Velma said, the invitation of our dreams to get our smear, our smear request. But it's important to try and get it done because of this, because the whole thing about cervical cancer and the prevention program is that we can pick it up before it becomes cancer. What we're looking for is pre-cancerous cells. It's not cancer when we do the smear. We pick it up before it becomes cancer and treat it. That's why we do it.
I think it's so important, because part of this is to try and reassure people that it is okay, and, you know, they can come in and it is all going to be all right. Part of the purpose of this podcast is to reassure people that they need not be fearful of coming in. I know from my own experience, I think the thought of having it done was actually far worse than having it done. If I'm honest, it is a tiny bit painful, but not excruciating. Is that your, be honest, yes, if most people say that?
It's like you say, the thought of it is a lot worse than actually having it done. And yes, it can be a little bit uncomfortable, but if it is uncomfortable at all, we can always stop at stage and we can have a little rethink and just, we can take time. But generally, it's not.
We've got different sizes of speculum. So the little thing that goes into the vagina, there are sort of very small ones. In fact, there's even what they call a virginal one, which is absolutely tiny. So we can put smaller instruments in. Sometimes that means that we can't do the smear properly, so we have to do a slightly bigger one. But on the whole, we can adapt to people. If they're having trouble, we will do our very best to make it as comfortable as possible. There are a few people who have something called vaginismus. Vaginismus is an involuntary contraction of the vaginal muscles, and it can be provoked by having had an uncomfortable experience in the past. Maybe you've had an uncomfortable sexual experience in the past, and your body sort of makes the vagina contract down. So if you have trouble putting in things like a tampon, and you find that, you know, you are finding it difficult to even put a finger into your own vagina, for example, everything kind of contracts down, so you're worried about having a smear, I would still say it's worth coming, because even if we just get halfway to doing a smear and we just do it very, very slowly over a few sessions, we'd rather try, get your confidence and have a go than not try at all. And also, just to say a quick word on vaginismus, you're not alone. There are things we can do to help. It is worth approaching your GP for some advice on that, because quite often there's quite a lot we can do. It's basically about retraining your brain that this is not going to be a bad experience for you.
Also, if people haven't been for a smear test before, they might be worried, have they shaved? Have they, you know, does it matter that you've got hair or no hair? What would you say to that?
No, it's absolutely fine. Just come as you are, is what I would say.
We really don't care.
No, it's like doing anything else for us. It's like doing a blood pressure, a blood test. It's, you know, you're more embarrassed than us. It's absolutely fine. Just as long as you come, that's the most important thing.
Can I just talk very, very quickly, because we mentioned when the cervical screening program happens, and it's every 3 years up to the age of 50 and then every 5 years. I've got two comments to make on that. One is that if you're under 25, we can screen you up to 6 months before your 25th birthday. But before that time period, we can't screen you with a cervical smear. And that's because nationally, the figures for cervical cancer are very low in that age group. So that screening the whole population below that age group doesn't pick up many cervical cancers at all. However, I wanted to say that if at any point in between your cervical screening appointments, you have anything of concern in that area, so it might be vaginal pain, cervical pain, it might be bleeding after sex, or just kind of weird pink discharge, or I have seen once profuse discharge, so lots of discharge that was abnormal, you need to come and see a GP. And we will have, or a nurse, of course, sorry, Velma, and we will check the smear, check your cervix. If we can't do a smear, we will refer you to the hospital to have your smear done in between the screening program dates. So even if we can't do it, that doesn't mean to say that we wouldn't refer you for that. We would. So if you're concerned, come and see us.
And I just thought it might be worth mentioning about the menopausal ladies that often find it a bit uncomfortable because of the dryness that is the natural sort of thing with the menopause. So if ladies are worried about having it done as a little bit older because it's a bit uncomfortable, I think we can prescribe them some estrogen cream, can't we, Nikki, which softens up the vaginal walls and can make it a bit more comfortable having that speculum in if they are finding that or worrying about that.
So should they ask for that before?
Yes, you have it a little while before, don't you?
If you know that you're a bit dry and it's all a bit sore down there, then it would be a really good idea to get some vaginal estrogen. It might take 6 months, three to six months. So I think should we move on to some other questions?
We've talked a little bit about the results and when they come through. It's sometimes not, in my experience, not always totally clear what they mean, Nikki.
Yes, that is a really common question that I get asked. I'm sure Velma does as well. There's a few categories, aren't there, of smear results. And maybe if we just go through, I look at it as a sort of ladder of results. So obviously you can get a normal smear result. Great. The next one that we tend to get is something called a borderline result. That doesn't mean that there is any precancer actually there. It just means that when they look at the smear result in the hospital, it doesn't look totally normal. It might look slightly strange. And so they're not quite sure. They don't want to sign it off as normal, but they'd like to see you a little bit more often. So borderline smears, they're not precancer. It just means it's not quite normal either. And then there's three grades of precancer. That's mild dyscariosis. I'll explain these. Moderate dyscariosis, severe dyscariosis. Dyscariosis means abnormal cells. So you can imagine mild, moderate, and severe means there's some abnormal cells up to this really looks quite abnormal. None of those are cancer. None of those results. So if you get severe dyscariosis and you think, gosh, what's this? It's still not cancer. It's still pre-cancer. All of these can be treated at what we call colposcopy, which is where they treat you in the hospital. And we'll tell you a bit more about that in a minute. So we've got borderline, mild, moderate, severe dyscariosis. Then there's a few other kind of slightly odd ones. There's the coelocytes, which I described, which just means we can see the wart virus there. And there's something called glandular cells. Glandular cells means that they, when they've done the smear, they've got cells there that don't naturally belong on the tip of the cervix. So these cells have come from the gynae tract, but they're not on the, they're sort of extra cells there. That is not normally a significant finding, but gynecologists like to see that. So we do tend to consider referral for that. And the very last and the most important thing is whether you've got HPV or not. So it will tell you this person has high risk HPV or not. If you have high risk HPV, if HPV is found in your sample, you're likely to need another cervical screening test or possibly a colposcopy, depending on what they've found. So if they've found, for example, HPV with severe dyscariosis, you will be referred. But you don't have to worry about trying to interpret the tests because the referral will all be done for you. You'll be sent, you need to have your next screening test in this interval of time, and you'll know what needs to be done next.
Can you explain, Velma, what a colposcopy? colposcopy?
Well, that's obviously done at the hospital where they've got a bit more specialised cameras that they can look a bit closer at the cervix and see it more clearly. So they're having a good look. And
So I think you do have to be prepared. If I send somebody for colposcopy, I do tell them you will have your legs up in stirrups. It's a bit more of a procedure. We don't do that in the GP surgery. So if you come and have a smear, you'll just be on the couch. We will ask you to bend your legs and open them, but we won't ask you to put your legs up in stirrups. In the hospital, they really need a good look at the cervix. So you will have your legs up in stirrups. It will feel a bit undignified, but there's always a nurse there. They do these clinics day in, day out. So again, it's much more embarrassing for you than it is for them. But what they will do is they will put you into stirrups. They'll put the speculum in again. And then what they do is they actually paint the cervix with a special treatment, which will show up cancer cells. They basically paint the cervix and have a look. And when there's an abnormal area that they can see on the cervix, that area can be treated. And it's in different ways, depending on how extensive it is, what your smear showed. Sometimes they'll just take away a small area. Sometimes there's something called a cone biopsy. This is for they're very high risk cases. They'll take a bit of the cervix away. They'll take the end of the cervix away. They'll still leave you with cervix. But this is the kind of thing that they will do. But most of the time, what they do is just freeze the area, the small patches that look abnormal. So what they do at colposcopy clinic depends on the extent of it, how severe it is. You know, if they see cancer, obviously that's a whole different kettle of fish. But it's basically a way of looking at the cervix in more detail. And you'll be awake. No general anaesthetic.
No.
It's not that uncomfortable.
I know that there is a vaccine now for young people. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yes, we've got a nice vaccine. It's changed over the years, actually. We've got Gardasil 9, which is the HPV vaccine against 9 strains of the HPV virus. So we're offering it to our children from the age of year 8 in school. So nurses will come into the school.
When they're about 9.
Yeah, about the routine vaccination program. They will come in and vaccinate the children at school. Boys and girls now, it used to be just the girls. So we're now vaccinating for the boys, to stop the spread of the HPV virus. And also there's a lot of research being done that the HPV virus, certain strains can cause penile cancers, oral cancers, anal cancers, vaginal cancers, quite a few different types of cancers. And there's all this research going on that hopefully vaccinating the boys as well will stop these cancers in the future for the younger generation. So it's all a very good, safe, effective vaccine. Just a one dose schedule that we're doing at the moment. It used to be about 2 or 3, but now it's got so much better. They only need one dose. I think it's just slightly different for homosexual men. They would have 2 doses. I think they're eligible up to the age of 45 now. So people from the age of 25, I think if you've got a low immune system as well, 25 upwards, you can have the HPV vaccine.
So you should have had an HPV vaccine when you're at school. What happens if you, for whatever reason, you realise that you haven't had it at school? Right. Can you get it?
You're eligible for free on the NHS if you are a girl under 25 or a boy born after the 1st of September 2006 to have a catch-up vaccine. But if you don't fall into this category, you can get it, but you would have to pay for it. So it's not available on the NHS. There are some other people at higher risk from HPV and that are eligible for vaccination. And those are any transgender people who are felt to have the same risk as men who have sex with men, any sex workers, and any people with HIV. And the other thing to say is that there's no evidence that the vaccine is harmful if you're pregnant. And there's no evidence there's a problem if you're breastfeeding to have the vaccination. Obviously, if you're very unwell and you have a high temperature, we always recommend that you wait till you're a little bit better before you have it. And the only reason not to have the vaccination medically is if you've had a serious anaphylactic allergic reaction to a previous dose of the vaccine or an ingredient in the vaccine.
Parents sometimes worry that their children, they're only in year 9 at school, still quite young. They're not, not at risk at this. But the important thing is to vaccinate children before they become sexually active or exposed to these viruses. So that's the reason why we're doing it at such a young age, to try and protect them before they get exposed.
And you can get it in your secondary school if you're in school year 8. If you're under 25 or a boy born after the 1st of September, you would come to us in the GP surgery, unless you can get it at school. And then if you're a man under 45 who has sex with men or the other people we've mentioned at higher risk, you can get them through the sexual health clinics. So that would be where you would get them.
So this virus, what does it actually prevent? Does it stop you getting HPV or will it stop you getting cancer?
So the HPV vaccine, Gardasil 9, that Velma has just discussed, it protects against HPV type 6, 11, 16, 18, 31, 33, 45, 52, 58. What I'm trying to say here is there's a whole load of HPV viruses out there. There's lots and lots of them, and it will protect you against the majority, but not all of them, because it's impossible to vaccinate against all of them. But these diseases that HPV causes are the precancerous lesions and cancers of the female genitals, and the anus. Genital warts is a really important thing to mention as well, because genital warts cause a lot of distress. They aren't cancer, but they are, it's a bit like getting verrucas on your feet. They're persistent. They're difficult to get rid of. If you can prevent getting them in the first place, then...
And are you saying the HPV virus causes
genital warts? Right. And if you vaccinate yourself, you won't get genital
warts. The rates have really come down. Actually,
yeah.
I was looking the other day.
Yeah.
Cases of genital warts have really lowered in the vaccinated population. So very good news, really.
Okay, so what are the actual symptoms of HPV? How would you know that you've got HPV?
So you wouldn't know, probably, to be honest. It's something that's found by chance. So you wouldn't know. And as I said before, even if you do, so do lots of the population. This is not something to be worried or ashamed about. It's really, really common. I wanted to make one point, actually, going back to the Gardasil 9 vaccine. It doesn't, if you've already got HPV, the Gardasil 9 work for you. It can't prevent you getting the infection if you've already got it. So there is that point out there. It does not cause HPV disease, the vaccine. It cannot cause it because it's not got the whole virus in it. So it's impossible for it to cause it. So you don't have to worry about it giving you HPV. But if you've already got the virus, there's nothing we can do from the vaccine side.
And your point that it's very important to
get it before you start. Yeah. We can screen you if we know you've got it. It's not that we can't do anything, because we'll monitor you and probably do more smears more frequently. But unfortunately, the vaccine won't cure you from that. And the other thing I wanted to say was about how often the vaccine's given. We said that you can have one dose if you're under 25. Between 25 to 45, you get two doses. But just to say that if you've got a weakened immune system, you still need three doses. So just ask us and we'll have plenty.
Forgive me if we've already covered this, but how, if you have got HPV, how can you get rid of it?
Well, there's no sort of treatment or cure. It's sometimes your body will get rid of its own immunity. So lots of people do come into contact with the HPV virus, and it doesn't necessarily give you any problems. So like Nikki said, you wouldn't always know that you've got it. But hopefully your body gets rid of it with its own immunity, but it can take a couple of years sometimes. And then you wouldn't necessarily know you've got it unless you went for screening or had some warts or something like that. So,
it can be late, a bit like verrucas, really. You can get the virus, it can cause a verruca, it can cause a wart for a bit. Obviously, you can imagine if the HPV virus is affecting your cervix, you're not going to know that there's any issue there. And then your body does tend to form an immune response to it and get rid of it. But there are people in whom the virus persists and they don't ever get rid of it. And that is the same with warts. You'll find people in the community that have warts that never really go. And really, I think this is why it's so important to get vaccinated before you've got any risk of coming into contact with it. Because once you've got it, it may not cause a problem. But the problem is, if it does, then you're in trouble, because we would then have to keep an eye on you and keep.
So there's nothing you can actually do.
There's no
rid of it.
It's not like an antibiotic.
No, unfortunately.
No.
Yeah, it's all in the prevention, really. And the other thing probably to mention is just about having safe sex as well would be another way of reducing your chances of getting it with new relationships, etc.
Sarah, you mentioned about self screening. Did you want to mention that?
Well, I'd heard on the news, I think it was in September last year, that they said that going forward, there was a new initiative with the NHS that you could be sent a self-screening pack and do the screening at home. Do you know any more about that?
I've heard a bit. I think
I know, and when we go on our train, there are pilots around, which I imagine it's just a self swab that you would be sent in the post. You just do a vaginal swab yourself and then send it back. But at the moment, it's not part of the national guidelines. But I imagine that may be the way going forward. That might happen.
I think the pilot that I saw at King's said that we, you know, that it would reach more women and that we'd get more women happy to screen. And so that is got to be a positive, hasn't it? I'm not sure. I think the sort of gold standard might be to do a smear, but this would be screening for the HPV virus. And as we've said, if 95% of cancers are caused by the HPV virus, then obviously, you know, screening for that is going to pick up the vast majority of the ones you're concerned about. So that is looks to me like a really good option.
I did have a little look online. It seems that you can purchase in chemists a home HPV test kit. I think it's about £50 or something. I assume if someone was worried that they might have HPV and that they weren't at the right time to be having a smear test, I suppose that's another option.
That's a really good point. And I think you're absolutely right. It is available over the counter to get an HPV kit.
So all of this screening, the main intention really is to prevent cervical cancer. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Yes. Yeah. And it's been shown that it does work, and cases have come down, but there are still cases that we need to obviously look at and treat. And
so how would you know if you had cervical cancer?
Okay. So to be honest, the commonest way of identifying it nowadays, because as Velma says, the number of cases has dropped dramatically, especially in our young population, in anyone that's getting regular screening or been vaccinated, is either through the program so there's a couple of kind of worrying things. One is any pain in the vagina or cervix. Now, that's difficult because it's quite a common place to get pain, but it's definitely worth coming and showing us so that we can see where the pain's coming from. I would say that I see a lot of women with either pain on intercourse or something painful in that area, and that I've only in my whole career seen one case of cervical cancer. So it's very unlikely to be that. The case I did see presented with profuse new discharge, so really heavy, watery discharge. And obviously blood is another issue. It might not have blood. The lady that I saw didn't have blood in her discharge, but the common thing to say is that it bleeds because it's getting, when you have intercourse, it's traumatized, and so it bleeds particularly after intercourse, but it might bleed at any other time. So if you're getting intermenstrual bleeding, so bleeding between your periods or bleeding after intercourse, then we need to have a jolly good look and see what's going on. What about charities, Sarah? Are there any support groups would be good to mention?
Yes, there are specialist cancer charities, obviously, for example, Cancer Research UK. There's also a charity called the Eve Appeal, which describes itself as the leading gynae cancers charity. When I went onto their website, I was particularly interested to see that they have an Ask Eve telephone number, which I thought was an excellent idea, because if you are worried about these things, sometimes I know from experience trying to get hold of your GP or it's sometimes just nicer to ask a specialist person, isn't it? So the telephone number for that is 0808 802 0019. And it tells me that you can speak to a nurse. One of the things on the website is of interest was that there are many challenges you can take part as part of fundraising for the Eve Appeal and for cancer research. And one of the challenges I know coming up is, for example, climbing the highest peaks in the Yorkshire Dales. But there are other less strenuous ones. So if something like that's of interest and you'd like to support those charities, I think that would be a brilliant thing to do.
I wanted to finish by just asking what's the sort of learning point, or what is the one single thing that we want people to take away from the podcast, Velma? What do you think?
To hopefully feel reassured and relaxed about coming to have your cervical screening. You know, I don't want anyone to feel worried or stressed about having it done at all. And I would always happily speak to anybody on the phone. Just anything I can do to make life a little bit easier for you coming to have it done, then absolutely, I would do what I can for you. And the same with the vaccination, how important the vaccination schedule is. There's a lot of fear about vaccines sometimes, but we can really show that it's got good results now coming out. And this is really going to help our young children and cancer rates in the future. So it's got to be a good thing. The other thing I want to say just about your charities is just that's a really good resource, because often you can speak to people that have been through the similar experiences, because you often, when something like this happens to you, if you have an abnormal smear or something, you always feel like you're the only one. But we see it so often, it can be a very common thing. And to speak to a charity or someone like that, it can often make you feel supported speaking to somebody else who's been through that experience as well. So that's often a good thing.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, so thank you so much, Velma. Thank you for coming in. It's really kind and lovely to see you, Sarah.
Thank you. No, I mean, it's been, you know, really interesting. Learned lots myself.
Yeah.
And it shows the importance of being screened.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We hope you've enjoyed this month's podcast. Don't forget that if this has made you aware of troubling medical symptoms, you may need to see your GP.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.